Okay, we're giving this year in the middle of a war, as we all know, and so we'll dedicate our learning to the safety of the soldiers. And also, it's the perfect parsha because Maaseh, I like to call it, is the parsha of Eretz Yisrael. So we're going to do one of these jumping from place to place. Small notes. Okay, we're going to take one of these jumping from place to place and show you how the theme of Eretz Yisrael is so prevalent throughout the entire parsha. Sometimes in places that you know, that you've heard of, and sometimes in places that you would be surprised to realize this is also an allusion to the land of Israel. So we'll start at the very beginning. We're going to do a short seker, a short
overview.
Thank you, of the parsha. Short overview of the parsha. Skipping from place to place. It's not a long parsha because Maaseh usually is part of a double parsha of Matot Maaseh. Okay, and so we're doing the second half of Matot Maaseh. It's not very long, and the first 40 psukim of Maaseh takes even less because when it's the Maaseh Masaot, the travels by Yisu Midafka Mata, it goes very quickly when they read in the Torah, just because each pasuk is, all these different places that nobody ever heard of, no one knows where they are, they're all listed. And the Mefarshim, obviously, they deal with the question of why in the world are they all listed if nobody knows where they are.
So why do they read them so quickly?
Because they're boring? I don't know. Because that delay, the laning is interesting. It's like it has its own sing-song kind of cadence to it. When it gets quick, then they give up the regular laning. Like usually you read it, Vayisu, Miyamsu, Vayachanu, Mibarsin. But at some point they just give that up, forget it, and it goes into the sing-song. It just goes faster. I don't know why they do it because it's faster or
like that,
it's not. You would read it. You don't do that.
Oh, okay. It's sort of like Az Yashir.
It's very much Az Yashirish. I don't know if I ever put the two together, but that's correct. Anyway,
so which would put it in context that it's kind of Shira, maybe.
What's the Shira about? What are we singing to? What are we singing a peon to? That's my job. That is my job. So I want to focus on two things. First, look at Sforno. Okay, Sforno says Ela Maaseh. Why? Ratzah El Yitbarach. Sheyichtavu Maaseh Israel. Why God wanted us to write down the travels of Israel. Lahudia zechutam belechtam acharav be'eretz lo zeruah. I don't know if you noticed last week's haftarah. Okay, right. The haftarah of last week ends off the following saying: Haloch the karat ba'oznei Yerushalayim. You should say in the ears of Yerushalayim, lemor koama. Right, Hashem. So says Hashem. Zacharti lachesed neurayich ahavat kelulotayich. I remember the chesed of your youth. The love of your
klulotayach, the beginning of our marriage.
Thank you. Lechtecha charei b'amidbar ve'eretz lo zeruah, that you followed me into the desert, into an unplanted land. The faith that the Bnei Yisrael had to follow Moshe Rabbeinu, it'll be good. It's very Israeli attitude. You know what I'm saying? Chusar, the attitude is always like, how are we going to do it? I don't know where I'm going to be. And then what are we going to do on Thursday? And like, and you get to Israel and like, all bets are off. It's very, What? I'm in the middle of like, I deal with like, between Israel and Chutzlaretz, and we're trying to encourage rabbis to get together as much as they can, emergency missions to support Israel during the war. And I try to explain to Israelis, Americans are not built in that way. It's much, much harder for them to say, I'm going to drop everything and we're going to go from Wednesday to Sunday to Israel. Mm-hmm. It's just different. I don't know where you're from. Is it like that too? Like it's just...
Very much.
Right?
South Africans will drop anything.
They will?
My husband's organizing a conference next year. And he's had people are turning him down now based on the matzav now for next year because they can't imagine...
I'm thinking of doing an academic program. So I contacted some program in America, and the guy emails me back and says, our cohort for 2014-2015 is closed. It was closed actually in like January or something. You can apply for 2016. Right, exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, if I apply to a program in Israel now, they'll be like, sure, come on, no problem.
Right, this week.
Exactly.
As long as it's before classes.
Exactly.
Yeah, first week or so.
But now we understand why. You don't know it, you have no idea what's going to be next week. It's just, the way it is. Lech decha acharei b'midbar be'eretz lo zera. So that's a chesed raich. So that's what he says, right? You know, how are we going to do it? How? What? How are we going to survive? How are we going to... Somebody knocked?
Donna sent a message asking if it's too late to come in.
No.
Said, no.
Oh, the bet we're talking about that.
Maybe she's at home.
She's at
home.
Oh,
she's so English.
She's not used to it yet.
In a good way. In a good way. In a good way. Okay.
Or she's our visual aid.
So this idea of faith, it was a big deal, especially in at that time. Bnei Yisrael they grew up in Mitzrayim. So we could assume that Egypt was the same way. That, you know, it makes sense that you plan and you try to know in advance and you know.
They were
builders.
They didn't plan anything, Rube.
They were products.
They were not masters of their own time.
They were also products of the culture in which they lived.
Okay, but they were...
All right. That's the chesed. So why, he says, but this is why the Masa'e is important. Why is that act of faith important? The Jewish people were not worthy of entering into Eretz Yisrael when they left Egypt. The land, the Midbar, was the process that purified them, that sanctified them, to allow them to enter into the land of Israel, to give them the zchut to merit Eretz Yisrael. And what says Sforno gave them that zchut? The emunah. The faith that they had to follow Moshe Rabbeinu, to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Eretz Lo Zera, into the unknown, into the land of the unknown, that's the recording of the Masa'eh, the recording of the trip. Because the trip was important. The trip gave them the zechut to enter into Eretz Israel. Yeah.
He had a similar answer with Avram when he went down, up somewhere, and then on his way back.
To Mitzrayim? He went to Mitzrayim. Or Grar, he went to Grar also.
Grar maybe? I don't remember, we discussed this, where he went and then he mentioned the places that he stopped the way back, and he said it was the same thing.
You mentioned that, I remember, you noticed that. Right, that it was that he was doing the reverse of, like, that he stopped on the way, and the Beit Malon didn't say that or something like that.
But there was this discussion about why is it mentioned that he stopped in the same places, and it was also to talk about his... I just remember it was a similar thing, it was to give a tribute to his... That he hadn't changed down there or something like that. It was the same kind of thing.
He wasn't the same person.
He wasn't. He didn't get caught up
in the Egyptian.
But
correct.
I'm saying
I remember that.
Of the location gives us a hint to their personality or what their deeds are. Is similar.
Well, here the essence is on the trip itself, the travels. That meaning it's. He's saying the emphasis is on the 42. It had 42 stops. It's like a long trip. It's a very, very extensive. It wasn't supposed to be 42 years in the desert, but nonetheless, the Masa itself was significant in that where are we going? At some point, you'd expect him to say, where are we going? How long are we going for? Etc., etc. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't that way. They were fine. You know, and they that was the level of faith that they had, even though there was some trouble on the way. Look at Rashi for a second. Rashi says, hi. Of course. Welcome. Hi, guys. Okay. They look so happy. Okay. Rashi has two answers. We're going to skip the first answer. Okay. One, the first answer is to tell you how great Hashem was. That Hashem, Rashi says the answer is 42 is much less than you'd think. Because they spent 40 years in the desert and they didn't wander around that much during the 40 years. We've skipped to the second answer. It starts, a couple lines from the bottom. Rabbi Tanchuma darash bo drasha acher. Rabbi Tanchuma had a different drasha. Morning. Okay? What's the different drasha? Mashal lemelech. There's a mashal, an allusion to a melech, a king. Shehaya b'no chole. His son was sick. V'holicho l'makom rachok l'refuato. Think about this image. Think about the parable, the allegory. His son was sick and he had to travel him a long distance in order to make him well, in order to bring about his healing. Kevan shayu chozrim. When they returned, Yitril Aviv Moneh Kol HaMasa'ot. He began counting all the trips. Amar lo, Kan Yishanenu, Kan Hukarnu, Kan Choshashto Joshecha. Here we stopped, here we, you know, we Hukarnu, we were honored. Here we spent a long time. Meaning that, but what's the emphasis, it's very fascinating Midrash, what's the emphasis of the trip? Why is each place on the trip important? Because it's a part of the return. Because the entire trip, what's the whole point of the trip? It's to bring us...
Sounds like we're building a relationship.
No. Not this emphasis. The emphasis here is to bring us back to where we started. Think about it. Very interesting question. Rashi, this drasha is so interesting because the whole allusion is also an allusion to, yes, why did they go down to Egypt in the first place? So Yaakov's Bnei Yisrael were sick in some way. They had to go to Mitzrayim in order to become healed. And now they went to Mitzrayim, they got the Torah, they're well, and now we're traveling home. So that trip home is so important because here we stopped. Remember that time we stopped on that rest stop and we all got ice cream. Remember that? And then we had to stay at that hotel and you all jumped on the beds and everybody had a great time. Yeah, I remember that. We used to live in Michigan, and we used to drive to the East Coast at least once a year. So we would always stop on the way because that was the fun. You know, it was only fun when they had enough stuff. But we, whatever. Anyway, okay. But the idea is, what's the focus of the journey? According to this midrash, according to the Sforno, we learn the focus of the midrash of the journey is the emunah. Oh, they left. They went. And that was the zchut get to Eretz Yisrael. According to the second midrash in Rashi, the focus here is the goal. Where are we going to? And once you're going to somewhere, then all the stops on the way are like, oh yeah, and then we stopped at Action Park, and we stopped here, and we stopped there, because we're all on this great, fun journey, because we're better now. We're coming back. We're returning. And then the journey itself has a lot of different meaning, which we all think can well understand, can well appreciate. Okay, that's example number one. Number two, skip two. So then you have all those trips. You have the, from there, went to here, went to there, went to here, went to there, went to here, went to there. If you skip to the end of the Perek Lamed Gimel, okay? Sorry, Pasuk, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Nun. Turn your page to the end of the Perek. Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Nun. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe be'arvot Moav v'yorden yirechol emor. Very, very, very famous section, which we've done before, but it's critical to mention. Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Nun. Okay, skip to Pasuk Nun. Where are they? They're on Arvot Moab, right? The plains of Moab. Al Yarden Yerecho. So everybody knows where you are because you've all stood on that mountain in Mitzvah Yericho. You stood over Yericho, correct? And then you can see from Mitzvah Yericho, you see the opposite mountain range that sits right opposite where Yericho is. That's exactly where they were. The whole camp was encamped in that plain below the mountain, opposite Yericho on the other side of the Yarden. So, i.e., where are they? Meaning, remember, this is the end of the Torah. Okay? All that's left is the Book of Devarim. Nothing happens in the Book of Devarim. They're there. They're ready to go. Okay? Right. They're there. They're ready to go. The Book of Devarim is, of course, we're going to read it for the next few months, but it's just a big speech. It's one long speech of Moshe Rabbeinu, and then he tells him a bunch of mitzvot, and then he dies. However long that took. But they're ready. They're ready to go. So this, it would make sense that this parasha, the end of Bamidbar, is the focus is moving forward. Daber al bnei Yisrael, pasuk nun aleph, ve'amarta aleihem, ki atem ovrim et ha-yarden el eretz Kanaan. You are about to cross over the Jordan into the land of Canaan. Ve'horashtem et kol yoshvei ha-aretz mipnechem. You shall drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you. Ve'ibadetem et kol maski yotam. You shall destroy all of their... Somebody help me out here. Nobody's got English? Oh, you didn't even know. Maskiyotam. Okay. We'll get to the Minharot in a second. We'll read Rashi in a second. What does it say, Tammy? 33:52.
Oh, maskit. I know what maskit is. It's a kind of a stone.
It's an idol.
But it must be used for Avodah Zarah. Correct. Getting because of the continuation.
Rashi says, Beit Sagidaton. Sagida. Sagid is misgad is to worship. Okay. It's the houses of worship.
The prostration
style. Okay. And their tzelem,
molten images.
Right, the graven images you shall destroy. And you shall destroy all of their altars. Pasuk nun gimel. Vehorashtem et haaretz v'yishavtem ba. You shall horash lehorish.
Inherit.
No.
What? No.
Conquer.
Not just that.
Conquer.
Correct. You shall conquer the land. The horish et ha-goyim means to drive out the nations so that you can settle it.
But it is the same show.
It's the same, right?
Like the same show.
Right. The horish means to settle. Settlers imply active settling. Okay, that's what we're talking about. The settlers is a bad name.
Flying back.
What?
Right.
Settling means to drive out the inhabitants, the current inhabitants, and to settle. You shall drive the harash. The harish means to inherit.
No,
how do I inherit the land?
Inherit. It means to conquer and take possession of.
Okay, correct. That's what I meant. Okay. V'yishavtem ba.
To inherit, you're completely passive.
How do you say inherit?
I don't know.
Not
the harish. It's not l'harish. No, it's a different form.
I don't know. Like, l'harish is to actively inherit. Can you say it that way?
No, it's an oxymoron.
No, because the idea is, it's implicit in it.
Take possession of.
It's not just I'm taking something.
Taking possession of something that belongs to you.
Oh, that's the idea.
That is rightfully
yours. That sounds
yours.
Like inherit.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Like
that's inside. Why that's the connection with Yerusha. Everybody understand? The word l'harish means to conquer. But it doesn't mean to conquer as a foreign conquering army.
To possess.
It means to take back that which is yours. It was your father's.
But that's not taking back.
No, to conquer and take possession of that which is rightfully yours.
Yeah.
I would say.
To take that which is rightfully yours. Okay, we'll do it that way. So you shall take that with the land that is rightfully yours.
Yeah.
V'yishavtem ba, and you shall dwell in it. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet ota. Because I have given you the land, l'reshet ota. It's like, you know, you can't get any more. What?
To
take possession. But you can't get any more, you know, important than a pasuk, than this pasuk. This is the basis of our presence here. This is the basis of our. This is the basis of the debate. This is the basis of the war which we're prosecuting now. Do we believe this in this pasuk, or do we not believe in this pasuk? Do we think that it is? Forget that little piece of land. We'll talk about that little piece of land now.
The fight in Gaza.
It's eternal. The fight in Gaza is not. It's not about Gaza. Fighting Gaza is about
Yad Binyamin.
And it's important for us to articulate that. The fight is about, do we have a right to be here? Do we have a right to be anywhere? They say no. So they will. And they say, we will, you know, like, the whole war is one big suicide bomb. We don't care. Our lives are not important. We'll blow ourselves up in order to make this point. And we send our soldiers in order to say no. Ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet ota. Is that connected? It's an interesting question, whether that's connected or not to the reshet ota. Our point is, this is our land. It doesn't have to turn us into the same monsters that they are. That's a tactical question. Simply a tactical question. To give them medical care, to give them electricity. That's not the question. The question we're discussing here is the ultimate question. Of course they accept it. Not accept it? Whatever. Anyway, this is a very famous pasuk. Why is it a very famous pasuk? Look at the Ramban. Very, very famous comment to the Ramban on this pasuk that is well known. Lamed Gimel. Nun Gimel, slicha. V'orashtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba, ki lachem natati et ha'aretz l'reshet ota, says Rashi, al dati, says Ramban, slicha, al dati zo mitzvat aseihi. He says, I believe this is a positive commandment in the Torah. Yitzave otam sheyishvu ba'aretz v'yirshu oto ki hu natna lahem. Right, God commands us that we should dwell in the land and inherit it, conquer it, take over it, whatever, because God gave it to us. V'lo yimasu b'nachalat Hashem. Okay, and we should not limos.
Is that travel?
No.
Scorn
the inheritance of God. God says, I gave you this gift. Okay, but it's not just like, it's like any gift that a parent gives to a child. The best gift that a parent can give to a child is the, what?
It's a cardboard box.
Yeah, it's the gift where the child has to actually earn it himself or herself. Has to work in order to receive it.
That's not a gift then.
Wait, of course it's a gift.
Is it?
What do you mean? If you give,
then it's there. They own it.
And this is my experience that when I taught kids, and they agreed with me. They go, "You used to talk in there." When I taught like grades, eighth graders, seventh graders, they would talk about after Hanukkah about their the Wii that they got or the video games that they got, really expensive stuff. And I said, "Yeah, you guys don't value that stuff at all. It doesn't mean anything to you." I said, "What? It's great." I said, "Nah, in 2 weeks you'll stop using it because it didn't mean anything to you. You didn't work to get it. They just gave it to you." To a kid, they all said, "You're absolutely right," and that's the way it was. It was fun for the first 10 minutes, but they didn't make put in any effort to get these incredibly expensive things. So then it means something to them. But the thing that that kid had to work and buy himself a pocket knife, he carried that pocket knife everywhere. Because that's just the way human nature is. We value the things that we exert effort in order to achieve. And we don't value the things that come to us for nothing. So
that's why we as parents value the things that our children take for granted, because we're working for it.
Correct.
We get it for them, and they are receiving it.
Correct. It's a very tricky, very, very tricky thing, you know, like Labdiel, we should all have such problems, like, you know, the people who are gazillionaires, they have terrible problems with their children, because they have everything. And when you have everything, you really have nothing. It's very, very hard to have a meaningful life when nothing you do really matters. You know, you could while away the rest of your life and you still would be extremely comfortable for the rest of your life. What do you do then? So, you know, everybody thinks that they want such problems. They probably don't. They really don't. Eretz Yisrael is the same way. Ki li natati lechem, I gave it to you, la reshet ota. It's worthwhile to you. And I made this point actually to Rina, we were talking about this on Shabbat. We're talking about this, about the Hamas doesn't understand, they have it entirely backwards. If they really wanted us to disconnect from the land, if they wanted to drive the Jews out of the land, they would just leave us alone. They would just say, you know, build your beaches and everybody have a good time and
you know how many people canceled flights of leaving Israel?
Right. It's an interesting phenomenon. People like vacations.
Wow.
What?
Cancel vacations abroad.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because the more, and they don't realize, the more we as a people sacrifice for Eretz Yisrael, the more connected we are to it.
Yeah.
The stronger we're connected to it.
It's such a cost.
It's a terrible cost. Terrible cost. But what? Yeah. But this is inherent in Chem Natati Ta'aretz. What kind of gift is that? Natati Lareshet? That gift of inheritance is what makes us connected to it. Because if it was just here, go ahead. You know, it's and the I think that's connected to what Nikki just said. The three things that are Niknet B'Yisurin, Eretz Yisrael, Torah, and Olam Haba. You want Torah, you're going to have to suffer for it. You have to work hard. If you get up early in the morning, you have to study late at night. You want it, and that's why it's valuable to you. Okay, same thing. So that's what Ramban says. V'lo yimasu benachalat Hashem. God gave you a gift, and you shouldn't limos. Scorn is the word, but maos is reviled. To be reviled by the gift of God, to be repulsed.
It's an active word, and
right?
You're translating it passive.
So how do you like?
That's why I said scorn, because scorn is a weaker verb, but it's an active verb.
Nah, I don't need it. What do we need God's gift for? Meaning, you have two choices. Either you take it, or you don't.
That's how we felt before we made Aliyah. We felt like if we don't at least try to come here, it's like Hashem gave this as our gift, and we're saying, we don't want it.
Right.
We don't need it.
Right. I mean, no, I think all of us. I think pretty much all of us sitting around this room kind of felt that way.
We also felt that way.
You answered the question that I was going to ask, which was how do we receive a gift that comes so painfully as such a cost?
Right.
By being connected to it and having to work afterwards, it's how you want it. But it's easy for us to say when we've made the sacrifice to be here.
Okay.
How do we communicate that to?
I would like to point out that despite the fact that we're in a war, as we speak, Olim are arriving in Ben Gurion
today,
right now. So if any of you ever listen to this, kol hakavod to you.
Yeah.
I don't.
She done this year in the airport.
You should have gone to the airport.
My husband's there now.
You know, have you noticed? Is there like a thing? They still do the thing? They still do the celebration?
Yeah, sure.
They did it today.
Too many people.
They were changing it?
Something
different. This year.
Or today.
Oh, just because of the war.
Today.
Oh, okay. Anyway, right. Because
there were sirens yesterday
in Ben Gurion. Anyway. That's a sacrifice. Yeah.
They postponed flights.
Okay. So I don't know. I think we all struggle with this question. It's very much a struggle. I would like to point out, Ramban is a dat yachid. You should understand, Ramban is not normative halakha. He thinks this is a mitzvah daseh. Rambam doesn't count this as a mitzvah daseh. So everybody like hangs their hat on this idea. Look at Rashi for a second. Rashi says it's not a mitzvah daseh. Ramban says it is. Rambam, Maimonides, doesn't list it as one of the mitzvot. It's a very famous comment that Ramban, it appears here. It also appears, there's a sefer mitzvot of the Rambam, right? The list of the mitzvot. And then the Ramban has this sort of like gloss, as it were, a commentary about all the mitzvot of the Rambam forgot. He missed a couple. So there's an argument. Everybody knows there's 613 mitzvot. The question is, what are the 613? So on like 590 of them, they all agree. But on like 15 or 20, there's like a little bit of an argument. Is this really a mitzvah d'oraita or is it not? So this is number 7 on Ramban's list, a mitzvah that Ramban forgot.
How you count those last 20?
Yeah, is it counted as a formal mitzvah d'oraita or not? Ramban clearly was a big Zionist too. Don't worry. He wasn't like anti-living in
but some
in
of the
Israel.
Disagreements also about like does this mitzvah include subcategories or are they all separate mitzvahs? That's
right.
Also how they come
correct.
Up with
it's a count. And sometimes it's accounting. It's an accounting issue. Who's an accountant?
Constant and was included in that.
No, so then there must be disagreement over some people say this mitzvah which was not a mitzvah.
Right. So if you add one, then you have to subtract one somewhere else. Correct.
Yeah, but it could have been included.
It all ends up as 613 in the end.
You're saying
right. If I think it's a mitzvah d'oraita, there's no way the Rambam thinks, yeah, that's not a value at all. You know, like it's gonna be like in a lesser one or an included in a value or something like that. What? Rambam?
But he also his family lived in Israel and
no, he didn't live, he passed through. I think the Rambam as an example.
No, but in his Yad HaChazakah, he's the only one who includes all of the korbanot and all of those halachot that are lachmid hayamim.
Let's ignore all that. I mean, okay, obviously this is a religious Zionist shir. This is like Maaseh, the land, you know, the Parsha of Eretz Yisrael, so you know what you're going to get. But this idea, the language of the Rambam, of Yeshua Takihu Natna Lahem, there is no better, easier time in all of history for Jews to live here. Take throughout all of biblical history, time of David HaMelech, time of Shlomo HaMelech, there's no easier, more amenable time for Jews to live in the land of Israel. You know, there was never a time, it didn't matter when you came back and somebody was at the airport waiting for you to give you money. It just didn't happen. Never happened. ever, and you could buy a house or rent a house and you'd have a place to live or there'd be food in the grocery store. Never ever happened. So it's as hard as it is and as challenging as it is, it's never been easier. It's not going to get any easier, you know. I mean, that's a dichotomy. It's the hardest thing to do, but the easiest it's ever been to do it. I don't know what the answer is, but the words of Ramban certainly do resonate. You know, this is the time. Time is now. If you're listening, come on down. We're waiting for you. Okay. Let's go to Rashi for a second. Because this points, Rashi points to our situation. Rashi and Gimbo, Baharashtem et Haaretz. Vaharashtem ota mi yoshveha. You shall drive her out from her inhabitants. Ve'az b'yishabtem ba. So he says it's not a mitzvah. Remember, Ramban said b'yishabtem ba is a mitzvah. Rashi says no, b'yishabtem ba is the result of if you drive out the inhabitants, then you can dwell in it. Tuchlu lehitkayem ba. You will be able to live in it. Ve'im lav, and if not, lo tuchlu lehitkayem ba. You won't be able to. Whoever your way would say, I'll give him better. Who has Orach HaChaim? Many of you have Orach HaChaim? You too. You do. Orach HaChaim. Look at Orach HaChaim at the end of Nun Hey. Let's read on for a second. Why? Let's read the Pasuk. I'm sorry, the Pasukim for a second. Nun Dalid. V'inachaltem et ha'aretz b'gorah l'mishpochoteichem. You shall inherit the inchaltem, nachala. Each one divided up according to your families. La'rav tabu nachalato, v'la'ma'at tamitit nachalato. You should give the big families more, the small families less. You have to give it out according to the matot, the families, the staff, the tribes, the way the lottery works out. Nun hey. Ve'im lo tov yishu et yoshvei ha'aretz b'ipneichem. And we need your help, Tammy, in a second. 55. If you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, v'haya asher totiru mehem, those who you leave over will be l'sikim be'enechem, v'litzninim b'tzidechem. They will be, Tammy?
Prickles in your eyes and
thorns in your sides. V'tzaruru etchem al ha'aretz asher etem yoshvim ba.
Alliteration there,
though. Rabin is into the text, but I mean, like, everybody else is getting chills about
it. Alliteration, it's like...
Let's read it again. Tzinim b'tzideichem v'tzaru etchem al ha'aretz. Oh, that's nice. I like that.
It's like, wow. It's like that prick.
Oh, my God. Those of you listening at home, we just had a nice, we just had a little boom outside. Baruch Hashem. Okay.
Baruch Hashem, we're safe.
And we read through the water and we accept that that's what happened then.
Yeah.
Transferring those thoughts, if you don't, X, Y, Z.
What do you mean? I don't understand what you mean.
The language in Tanakh about dealing with your enemies.
Yeah.
Doesn't sit comfortably with modern
driving out your enemies.
Liberal views.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one second. What is the reason, by the way, how are they going to be, no, one second, how are they going to be thorns in your sides? What is the implication here? No. It's very clear what the implication, the word, the next pasuk. Look at the next pasuk. The next pasuk is critical. Whatever I said to do to them, I'm going to do to you. Why? What is the thorn of the side? What is the fear of the inhabitants of the land? We're reading it literally. It is not meant literally like the way we're reading it about Hamas. Correct. Exactly right. The point is, if you leave the inhabitants of the land, it starts out, the whole chapter starts out, you shall destroy their idols and destroy their altars and destroy their graven images. Because if you leave them there, they will influence you. You will become like them. You will assimilate their culture. You'll assimilate their idolatry. Mostly because this is what you were. It's like telling an alcoholic who's on a 15-step program, who's like hasn't been drinking for a couple of years.
Smell the alcohol.
Yeah, it's right there in front of you. It's too much.
Buy a bar.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
Change it into a restaurant.
Yeah, right. Destroy. You have to destroy all the bars because if people are serving alcohol all around you, you're just not going to be able to handle it. And then you will be doing what you used to do. And by the way, what happened in the end? Everybody who's ever read any of the Navi? Anybody read Sefer Shoftim? Right? That's exactly what happened. It's exactly what happened. And especially later on, in the book of Malachim, what happened? This is exactly what happened. They were not able to completely drive out the idolatry. And Moshe Rabbeinu is clear. All of it. Nothing left. Destroy it all, because otherwise...
That's what I said to you this morning.
Hold on. Read Orachayim. Orachayim. Bitzaru etchem al ha'aretz. Unbelievable. Look at Or HaChaim.
Yes.
Oh, Tam, you don't have it. It says Or HaChaim. See on Pasuk Nunhei, Bitzaru Etchem. Or HaChaim on Bitzaru Etchem. Right here. You see it?
Mm-hmm.
Pirush. Meaning. Lo milvad shiachziku b'chelek miha'aret shelo zachitem bo. Not just that they will take the part of the land that you didn't take. Elagam chelek shezachitem bo atem v'yishavtem bo. In addition, the part that you did take and you are dwelling in, v'tzaru el tchem al chelek sh'atem yoshvim bo. They will afflict you about the part that you do have, lomar, telling you, kumu tzu mimenu. Get out. I mean, it's like, that gives me chills. That's an Or HaChaim that's like, you know, like, just put it on, like, you know, on Ynet. You know what I'm saying? It's unbelievable. It says, Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's not enough that they're going to want to get rid of, get you out of the part that they're in. As soon as they get you out of the part that they're in, then they're going to say to you, oh, the rest of Israel?
Wow.
Get out. That's unbelievable. That's like...
Wow.
Prophetic.
So true.
What? Or HaChaim was living it?
Yeah.
No, Or HaChaim wasn't living it. He was living in a time where they didn't control Eretz Yisrael.
He was living inside. You think that there were no anti...
Of course there were, but they didn't have control of it. Hashem Yoshvim Ba, he didn't live in a time where we controlled part of the land and we didn't control another part. He didn't know. You know what I'm saying? How could he know? He didn't control anything at his time.
Right.
They lived in Eretz Canaan under the control of the... Who was there? Ottomans. Who was there in the 1200s, 1300s? Or HaChaim? He was in Swat, right. Whatever control it was. We're living in this time. We are living, it's impossible to overemphasize. We are living, I was telling Tammy this, we are living in biblical times. Yesterday, there's this video that I'm sure all of you saw about the Chayalim dancing with the Chabad guys, with the van. It took me back to like Yimot David HaMelech. Whenever was there a Jewish army, they were strong, and they were powerful, and they were faithful, and they believed. And they knew, we know we will win because we're strong. That's right. Mishima, we're living in biblical times. We're living in times of, you know. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. They all were like, they got caught up in it. And it gives them strength. And it gave me strength to see that. Because this is the time in which we live. Yeah.
Okay, but then aren't we wrong? But then even saying that we're one peaceful prospect, doesn't that go against?
We're not saying one peaceful prospect.
We're prepared to be a peace of our
land. Oh, I have to add that to my course this year in Orod. I'm giving a course called the Jewish State and the contradiction between democracy and Judaism that are inherent in the state.
And you should give away Dershowitz's
book. Maybe you're right. Maybe I should keep Dershowitz's book. It's in Hebrew. It's a Hebrew course. I have to. So in addition, the lesson I just prepared this week is on the letter of this I think he's a colonel. I never know how to translate it. Tataluf, his name is Winter, who wrote this letter to Golani or Givati. He wrote the letter to Golani, a very famous letter. Givati.
You spoke about it last year.
I mentioned it? So that letter is very... what's the Jewish value? Is the Jewish value this? How do we match this value of a Horashtem with our Tzvi Shavtim Ba? Is that a Jewish value of wanting to live in peace with our neighbors? Or is the Jewish value drive out all our neighbors? You know what I'm saying? And it's a very difficult question. And we're just saying it because of the democratic side, because of the secular side of the Jewish state. And people will argue the other way.
There's elements in like Sila and Oseh Shalom, Mamash, that peace is a value.
Sure it is.
In peace.
Correct.
With our neighbors.
I'm happy to... I could readily argue... I want to live in peace with my neighbors. I'm happy to live with my neighbors, but I'm not going to give you half of my house in order to do it.
Really?
Okay.
So yeah, but I'm saying no. You painted it as two things: do we, you know, lahorish and fight them up, or do we live in peace?
No. Or do we give up part of our land in order to live in peace? That's a separate question. All right, but that's not next. Move on. Oops. Running out of time. Next chapter is chapter 34. And it's Gvulot Haaretz. I'm not going to go through Gvulot Haaretz, but I'm trying to show you how this whole parsha is Eretz Yisrael, right? The very next parsha is what are the boundaries of the land of Canaan? And anybody who takes these boundaries and looks at a map, well, might notice that.
Do we have a map?
It's quite expansive.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's basically from the Euphrates River all the way to the Nile, and everything in between. Yeah, just read it, okay?
We're like left with like a tenth of.
Much less. Okay. Anyway, you can see it a bit. Right? If you look in the there's a Dat Mikra, there's an atlas from Dat Mikra. We have it somewhere. I'll show it to you afterwards. There's a whole long map. Okay. Next.
What do you mean that the land of Israel were meant to have?
The land of Israel that's delineated in the book of Dvarim, in the book of Bamidbar. That's all I can say. Let's skip to Perek Lamed Hei. Then there's a whole interesting chapter about the delineation of what are called Arei Leviim and Arei Miklat, right? Refuge cities. That if a person kills someone accidentally, or even on purpose, if one person kills another person, the person who kills runs to an Ir Miklat, a city of refuge. They decide whether he did it on purpose or accidentally, what level of culpability that person has. And if he had committed, if the killing was done accidentally, he must stay in the city of refuge. Otherwise, there's a person called the Goel Hadam, the blood avenger, who has the right to take vengeance and kill that person. And he stays there until
the Goel Hadam have to go in there?
No, rightful. He's good. Anyway, we're not going to go into this today. Somebody remind me next year. We'll do on this partial. We'll do the Goel Hadam. There's a lot of interesting things to talk about. Have we done it?
Yeah.
At some point, we've done everything.
No.
Okay, fine. Okay. I basically go through my Chumash to see, oh, I underlined that, so you must have done that. Anyway, I want to point out a very, very fascinating detail that you might not have noticed that's Eretz Yisrael related. Turn to Lamed Hei Chaf Tet, 35:29. Okay.
Very specific details.
What do you mean?
About
the Yermikva?
Yeah.
About the way of killing also.
No.
Up,
the,
down.
The, where you get, how much you give the Levim, how much, how to measure it.
Array Levim. Levim had, right, 42 cities. Interestingly, 42 cities corresponding to 42 travels. The number 42 comes up a lot. Plus the other six Array Miklat, three on one side of the Yarden, three on the other side of the Yarden. Then that totals 48 cities of refuge. Fascinating discussion. Anyway. What? The people who... It's a very fascinating question, because like the right, they talk about, the poskim talk about that the Levim city, dwell in the cities, the Levim cities, but if somebody killed by accident, he comes, he needs a place to live. So I often wonder about the technicalities of it. Do you get
like
a free apartment? Do you have to pay? Like how do you, what happens if there's no room? And so I saw one commentator that implied that the Levim have to move out, they have to go to another city because it's, because this person has to dwell there, he has no place to live. It's a very interesting question. You know, it's a very interesting question. Like the technical questions of how is the country supposed to run? Like who is supposed to, I don't know, who built the sidewalks? Who took out the garbage? You know what I'm saying? In the other Levi. They're very fascinating questions. Says the Torah, V'hayu eile lachem, these rules, these laws of Ir Miklat, et cetera, murder and accidental death, l'chukat mishpat l'dorotechem, they should be the statutes of mishpat, of justice, l'doroteichem, for your generations, b'chol moshavoteichem, in all of your inhabitants, wherever you live. Okay, what does that sound, wherever you live? Wherever, no matter what. Look at Rashi. Fascinating Rashi, which applies. Rashi says, lamad, this teaches us, shetehei sanhedrin katana noheget b'chutz la'aretz, kol zman shenoheget be'eretz Yisrael.
Really?
Right, when there is a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, then you can have a Sanhedrin in Chutz La'aretz. But if there is no Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, then you can't have a Sanhedrin in Chutz La'aretz for certain laws of Knesset, and you know, there are certain statutes, religious statutes, like the courts have authority. For, where do the courts get their authority from? Who made you God and said that you have the right to decide? So it's a very fascinating, I mean, it's a, if you lawyers, did you ever have like in the first year of law school, legal theory, where does the law get it, does the court get its statutes from? There's all kinds of fascinating legal theory. The people instill in the courts the right as an extension of the people. It's not like that in the Jewish court. The Beit Din doesn't get its authority from me. What? The monarchy. Oh, it doesn't get it from the monarchy. Fascinating. In England, it's like, right, they don't even know what they are. Anyway, so... I'm sure that's a basic legal course. We have to read all these boring articles, right? Anyway, so in Judaism, it's not like that. Where does the Beit in the Sanhedrin get its right from? Where does it get its authority from? The Ribono Shel Olam. Where was the Sanhedrin? Where did it sit?
Lishkat
HaGazid, right next to the Beit HaMikdash. The seat of justice was right next to the seat of God.
The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court. Well, it wasn't just the Supreme Court. They also legislated. They did a lot of different things. So, says the Torah, says the Rashi, by the way, and Ramban has a comment on this, he says, I don't know where they get this from the Pasuk. Right? If you think about, read the Pasuk again. Where would you think that the rule applies? Where and when? What?
Anywhere.
Read the Pasuk again. Where would you think it applies? Where and when? Where and when?
Always.
Always? Everywhere.
No,
comes along the Midrash and says... Not really always everywhere.
What happens in Israel?
Yes, depends what happens in Israel. You understand? It reads it totally out of context. It's a drash. But it's a, clearly it was a Mesorah Chazal had, because this is a halakha. This is a psak halakha.
What the...
If there's no Beit Din in Lishkat HaGazit, then the Batei Din that we have are only Batei Din of three, and we instill in the Beit Din the authority. They don't have the right to come and impose their will upon you as a member of the community. I mean, remember, the Beit Din was charged with onshin, it was charged with punishments, it was charged with fines. The Beit Din was basically the established authority of the Jewish community to maintain order. So where did it have its authority from? It had authority from God. So if you have a community in Babylonia, which they had a Beit Din. If you had a community in Brooklyn, or London. The Beit Din in London derives its authority. It doesn't have any authority. The Beit Din in London can't go to somebody and say, you are misarevet and we're going to put you in jail. You're not getting your wife again. Or you're not behaving appropriately, we're going to give you a fine. They have no authority like that in London. Right? Only when people approach them and want their services, then they have a Beit Din. But in when there's a Beit Din in Lishkat HaGazit, then the Beit Din has authority outside of Eretz Israel as well. It's a very, very fascinating little detail that you
it
never would know.
Medical,
what?
It has how would the Beit Din in London ever be able to approach someone?
Are you asking meaning because of...
I don't know. Because...
Back then...
Courts,
so, correct. So back then...
Yeah.
For many, many hundreds of years, the local authority it delegated the maintenance of the Jewish community
to
the Jewish community. Right. The Beit Din did have the authority to instill. Right. All right, that little detail. We have two more. I'm running out of time, but we started late. Two more. Let's read on.
Yeah. What's interesting is that this is like in reference to the Iranian draft, which of course...
are only in Israel.
Yeah.
Right.
And not even. Well, they will be, or they were.
They were.
Yeah.
What will they be? Nobody knows. Okay.
Because it says the Dora Tehem, the Kol Moshe Tehem, Arabic Lab.
No, we're talking about talking about right the rules of how you deal with someone, how you deal with someone who kills. Okay. Let's get to Lamed Aleph. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Lo tikhu kofer the nefesh rotzeach. You shall not take kofer. Kofer is
Perek Lamed
Hey. You shall not take kofar as payment for the murderer. Asher hu rasha lamut. He wants to pay his way out. Ki mot yamut. He should be put to death. Lamed bet. Lo tikhu kofar lanus el ir miklato. Lashuv lasheret ba'aretz ad mot kohen. Somebody kills by accident. He says, you know what? I really don't want to dwell in that city. I'll tell you what, I'll pay fine. I'm going to pay a nice fine. We'll make sure that everybody's happy and I'll get to go home. No, we don't do that either. Why? Lamed gimel. V'lo tachnifu et ha'aretz asher atem ba. You shall not. Hachnif is a word that's
cause
almost impossible to translate. What does he have?
Cause
unfaithfulness to the land that you are dwelling in. What in the world does that mean?
For the blood causes the land to be.
Ki hadam hu yachnif et ha'aretz. The blood yachnif. Rashi translated as tarshiu. You shall not make wicked the land because blood wickedizes the land. The only kapara, the blood, the land will take for he who spills blood is the blood of the spiller. Right? That's the only kapara the land will take. It wants its land back. What's fascinating here is, what in the world does the aretz have to do with anything? Okay, you know, we're talking about justice, we're talking about appropriate behavior. You don't take bribes. We don't allow people to pay their way out of punishments. That we all get. And all of a sudden, throws in the Torah, v'lo tachnifu et ha'aretz. Okay? By the way, just maybe we'll do another year. Did we ever do chanifa?
No.
We never did it?
No.
Oh. Okay.
What does that mean, do chanifa?
We never study the topic of chanifa. Okay? Chanifa is a fascinating topic. Maybe next year, maybe 2 years. Okay? Okay? You never heard of it? Oh, it's an important topic. Chanifa in halacha means flattery. Chanifa, if you look at Kli Yakar, chanifa means to give something on something in expectation of something less in return. Mm-hmm. Meaning, the Chazal derived a prohibition of chanifa. You're not allowed to flatter someone who's a criminal, a murderer. You're not allowed to make him feel good in order to get something in return. You're not allowed to honor someone who's not deserving of honor in order for monetary benefit. It's a very, very interesting thing. Because we do it all the time. Right, we do it all the time. Okay. Terrible.
What? Charity.
What?
So do our fake friends do that.
So do
our fake friends.
Who just arrived.
Our fake friends who just arrived?
Yeah.
Fake friends who just
arrived?
Ah. They don't give us chanifa. They tell the truth.
They're not friends.
They're not our friends. Okay, but it makes you sound like the land. How does the land sound? This is a very famous idea that I love in Rav Kook. How does the land sound? This, remember, we've spoken about this before. Right? The land is not just this inanimate thing.
It is. It's an entity.
That's right. The land won't take this. The land doesn't accept this. The land doesn't...
Doing
correct? It's a very Rav Kookian idea that Eretz Yisrael is a living, breathing thing. It's an entity. It's an organism. That's number... I have to end it with one more thing. Okay, skip to the last pasuk. Second to the last pasuk. Line 31. No. Okay. The last pasuk. Third to last pasuk. Very end. Vatiyana. So the parsha ends with the daughters of Tzlachat. The daughters of Tzlachat, remember, they asked in order to receive their father's inheritance. And they were, because their father, they were the only daughters, and their father would have otherwise not gotten a nachalah. And their request was granted. They said, yes, you guys deserve your father's inheritance. At the end of the parsha, so the people from the tribe say we have a problem. Because if they accept their father's inheritance, and then they marry out of the tribe, so they're from Yosef, from Menashe, and they're going to marry somebody from Reuven, so their husband will inherit them, and now Reuven will have our inheritance. So Moshe came back and said, good point. They all have to marry their cousins. And they're all very, no problem, so they all married their cousins. Okay, and that's the end of the parasha. The Torah says, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lam Bedvav Yud Aleph, Vatiyena Machlat Yutzach, Hagam, Milkav, Noah, Benot Safchad, Livnei Do, Dehen, the Nashim. They all married in the family. Wonderful. Mimishbechot,
B'nei... In the Shevet, they're not first cousins.
B'nei Dodin, they married their cousins. Yeah, it's fine. Mimishbechot, it wasn't thought of as anything unusual at the time. Okay?
I can tell you, two generations ago, they were still doing it. My grandparents were first cousins.
Absolutely, yeah. Mimishbechot b'nei ben Asher ben Yosef hayu l'nashim. They married the Asher ben Yosef. V'atihi nachalatan al mateh mishbechot avihen. And wonderful, their inheritance stayed in the family. They stayed in their family. The Midrash says the following. Mimishbechot b'nei ben Asher ben Yosef. Why ben Asher ben Yosef? Why not mimishbechot b'nei ben Asher? Where does Yosef come in?
He wanted to
convey to ben Yosef. V'alo kfar ne'emar b'nei ben Asher. Says the Midrash HaChifetz. Ella Yosef chibei bet haaretz. Yosef loved the land of Israel because it says Shneemar va'alotem et atzmotai mizeh. I don't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. I want to be buried in Israel. Ubenotav chibebu et haaretz. Okay, and their children also loved the land. Lamdecha shekulam tzadikim, that they were all righteous. V'chol mishem asav u'masei avotav stumin u'peret lecha katuv le'achad mehem le'achzer le'shevach. If the actions of the children and the parents are not described, but the Torah says this person should be praised. Arei ze tzadik ben tzadik. They're tzadik ben tzadik. So even the parsha ends at the very end, says a midrash, mentioning Yosef in order to emphasize this idea of love of the land, the beauty of the land, and I think this idea we saw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at least 6 examples of this theme of the connection, our connection to Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. This nachala, this inheritance that we have throughout Parshat Masa'eh. And that's where they were at the edge of Yericho. And here we are sitting in Eretz Yisrael today, living their dream, living the fulfillment that Moshe Rabbeinu never had the merit of fulfilling. And halavai, you know, we are suffering the pain of and the costs of living here. But between you and me, we wouldn't have it any other way. Okay, so Kadosh Baruch Hu should grant our soldiers strength and victory and safety.